like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Kathy Finelli, the director of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, an organization founded in 1998 by two University of Florida students. The mission of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue is to rescue, rehabilitate, and adopt out rabbits to loving homes, as well as to educate current and potential rabbit owners. The organization is committed to raising awareness about rabbits as pets, including what sort of households should and maybe shouldn't be joined by rabbits, plus various myths and misconceptions about rabbits. Gainesville Rabbit Rescue also functions as something of a bunny-human matchmaker, placing some 150 rabbits in homes each year. We'll hear about how she entered the rabbit realm and learn as much as we can about adopting and caring for pet bunnies and more when I speak with Kathy Vanelli in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak with Dina Athanasi of the Animal Coalition of Tampa, which, as you probably know, provides low-cost spay and neuter and other medical services at a reduced cost for pets. One reason they're able to provide these things at a discounted price is because they hold big fundraisers each year, including events like the 17th Annual Stride for Strays happening this Sunday, October 22nd, at Perry Harvey Senior Park in Tampa. Meanwhile, let's get to Kathy Finelli and rabbits with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Kathy Finelli to Talking Animals. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you very much for having us on your show to talk about some pet rabbits.
Yeah, no, looking forward to it. And, of course, I do want to explore various aspects of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, including its mission and history. But in a discussion that may dovetail with the Gainesville Rabbit Rescue history, I'd like to begin here by exploring a bit of your history, obviously, especially as it pertains to rabbits. So tell me about your very first rabbit.
My first rabbit I found in my backyard. I had a stray cat that I saw was stalking something and kind of wanted to find out exactly what it was, and saw this little brown rabbit and thought how strange it was that he was out early in the afternoon, but thought it was possibly a wild rabbit that was injured, and got a carrier and was going to try to catch him. And when I went over to him, he literally jumped in my arms as if to say, "Please, I don't belong out here." And it was then I realized that it wasn't a wild rabbit, but a pet rabbit. And at that time, I really didn't want a rabbit, didn't know what to do with one other than they needed to eat and drink water. So I called the Humane Society. The Humane Society said they did not take rabbits. And a friend of mine located Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, got a hold of them, and they were not able to take him. But they said that they would take him into the program if I could foster him. And I did that for about 3 months, and then he found a home, and I felt very guilty, almost like I had given up one of my animals. And so I thought, I'll foster one more. And that was about 14 years ago, and many fosters later. I have two of my own rabbits, and I have two foster bunnies that I foster in my own home.
And so, Kathy, this initial sighting of the rabbit in your backyard, was that about 14, 15 years ago as well?
Yes, it was. That was, and I named him Mr. Bunny. Thought that was pretty original. And I had him, as I said, for about 3 months before he found a home. And yes, that's how I got a hold of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, and actually started to learn about the plight of pet rabbits. Because before then, I really didn't know anything about rabbits needing to be rescued, or didn't think that anyone would take a pet rabbit and turn him loose. That was the only really other thing I knew, was that he didn't belong outside.
And do you think that first rabbit that you told us about had just broken free, or do you think his humans had actually set him loose?
You know, after doing this for the number of years I've been doing it, the general consensus amongst rabbit rescue people is that probably, I would say, a good 95% of rabbits that are loose were actually turned loose by their humans, thinking that they can survive out there in the wild, or not really caring whether they did or they didn't. It is very seldom that rabbits get out on their own. It does happen. In the 14 years that I've been doing this, we've actually been able to repatriate to their families about 4 rabbits that got out, and the family did not turn them loose. They just got out on their own somehow or another, went out the front door. If they were in an outside hutch, the last person to care for the rabbit didn't latch it properly. Things of that sort.
Right, but it sounds like from what you're saying, that's truly just a very rare exception to the rule. And if a pet rabbit's out and about, it's because someone decided that rabbit was going to be out and about.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds kind of cruel, because I imagine, depending on how long that rabbit's been in that household, but almost regardless of the length of time, turning it loose, it seems like a cruel fate would await.
It is basically a death sentence for most rabbits, unless somebody finds it early enough and brings it to a shelter, brings it to a rescue like ourselves. Because they are pet rabbits, they're used to us feeding them. They don't get the same nutrients from the grass as wild rabbits get. They don't have the same defense mechanisms. They've been domesticated for hundreds of years now, so it's similar to taking a dog and placing him on the outside in a forest or in a yard. He may survive for a little bit of time, but basically, if a predator doesn't get a pet rabbit, what will happen is they will literally starve to death, and they will be attacked by fur mites, ear mites, ticks, fleas, many different parasites. They can get fly strike very easily, which is where a fly lays an egg in an open wound. And then the larvae will eat through the skin to emerge. I'm not quite sure how much longer, but so there's a lot of dangers out there for pet rabbits that have been turned loose.
Yeah, well, even rabbit number one that you've told us about, again, I would have thought one of the chief dangers, would be predators. So the fact that when you got near to this one, instead of hightailing it, that it jumped in your arms, it's like, okay, so let's hope that things are going to work out for you. Because if any other situation, it seems like he didn't just have any kind of instinct to take flight or do anything to get
away.
Correct,
because they're so used to people taking care of them in a household. And so when they're out there like that, many of them, unless they were born feral, which is where two rabbits might have been turned loose by a family, and it happened to be a male and a female, and then they of course, breed, unless they were born feral, most rabbits want people. They want human interaction, and they know they don't belong out there, and they're frightened, and they see a human, and they're, there's my salvation.
So at the time that you met the first rabbit and then started getting into fostering from there, I made reference to other animals. So what had been your history with other pets at the point of discovering that rabbit in your backyard?
The only other animals I had had previously were basically cats and dogs. I think as a child we had a couple of parakeets. So my only frame of reference was cats and dogs, which no matter how sweet, no matter how wonderful they are, those are predators. And now you introduce a rabbit into your life, which is a prey animal, and it really makes you think very differently, because once you start to study them and you understand all of their behavior is geared to survival, but in a different way than predator behavior is geared to survival. Many of our volunteers, many of our adopters are vegetarian and vegan, and they make wonderful pets for vegetarian and vegans, because you don't have to have meat or dairy in your refrigerator to take care of your pet. And so I think they lead to people thinking very different than you would with a dog or a cat.
And so at this point, all these years later, do you have either a cat or a dog in the household, or have you kind of said, look, if I'm going to be this involved with my rabbits too, my own, and too fostering at any given moment,
I have a dog.
Okay.
And I have a cat.
Okay.
And I also, for somehow or another, I have two stray feral cats that I feed.
Okay.
And, but basically in my home, I really just have one cat and one dog.
Right. But obviously, I guess it all, despite the predator-prey animal dynamic there, I guess it all continues to work okay.
It can work okay. It really depends upon, especially with dogs, more so than with cats, because cats tend to be a lot smaller than dogs. But it can work really well with dogs as long as your dog is not a dog that has a very high prey instinct, where whenever he sees anything run, he wants to chase it. So you do need to be very cautious, but because you have a dog or a cat, doesn't mean you can't have a rabbit. It just means that you have to know your individual personality of your dog as well as the personality of your cat or even of your rabbit. And each rabbit is really very, very different from each other. My own two rabbits are siblings. They're sisters from the same litter. And each one of them has a very different personality from the other. And yet they're similar in a lot of ways, like most animals from the same litter would be.
It's interesting to me, Kathy, in the way that you've talked and sort of tracing your history over those 14 years or so. If I would have had to guess, I would have wagered that you would have more rabbits in your house between your own rabbits and foster rabbits than the total of four that you have. Have there been times when that number has been higher?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At one point, I did have 11 rabbits.
Okay. That's kind of more what I was sort of figuring when we started talking here. But
yeah, that was when we did a very large-scale rescue from a hoarder. So every one of the female rabbits we took in was pregnant. And I fostered a mom who had 6 four-week-old infants with her. And 3 days later, she gave birth to another litter of 8 babies. So there were a lot of rabbits in this home at the same time. And my house is not that large. So one of the reasons why I no longer have a lot of rabbits in my home is because we actually now have a dedicated shelter. And we currently have about, I believe we have 52 rabbits there. We have 45 rabbits in one-on-one foster homes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So it is an issue. For every rabbit that we're able to accept into our rescue, we probably have to turn at least 5 to 6 away because we just don't have the space or the financial ability to care for more than about 100 at any given moment.
And to what extent is that seasonal? Like, are there certain parts of the year where there's just a bigger wave of rabbits that you're asked at least to help with or adopt or take in or rescue?
Absolutely. Usually about 3 months after Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We refer
yeah.
to it as the Easter bunny dump season.
Yeah.
People will purchase these cute little baby bunnies from a roadside or from a flea market, a pet store. And then they're usually, here in Florida, they have to be a minimum of 8 weeks of age. So 3 months later now, they're sexually maturing, and the personality can very well change as they sexually mature, or the children have already lost interest in the rabbit.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is if the parents really didn't want it, then the phone calls come in for us to take the rabbit. In addition to the Easter bunny dump season, we're now actually seeing a Christmas bunny dump season where people are getting rabbits as Christmas presents for small children.
And really?
The same thing is happening about 3 months after Christmas. We're getting more phone calls. The usual sad part about Easter bunny dump season is that it falls somewhere between June and July, which is a very slow adoption period. Parents are not bringing new family members into the household because the kids are out of school, so they're going on vacation, they're traveling a lot more, and they don't want to bring a new family member into the household. So it's a very difficult time for most rescues until the kids go back to school. And when I say kids, we really say that no matter how much your child is asking for a rabbit, no matter what their age, whether they're 4, whether they're 12, whether they're 20 and still living at home, it is the parents who really have to want any animal, but in particular, the rabbit.
It really sounds like, boy, with the way you describe the Easter bunny dump and the season, you know, the time of year that places that at with the 3 months of bunny bottleneck, basically, with big, I'm sure, repercussions. So, and we will definitely get into what really is involved in having a rabbit as a pet, because obviously a lot of people, especially that do the Easter buy, I'm intrigued to know about now this Christmas element, because that seems a little bit more surprising. The Easter one seems sadly a little more predictable to me, but we'll find out about all that requirements and needs of pet rabbits. But okay. Let me let folks know right now, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Kathy Finelli, the director of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, which seeks to rescue, rehabilitate, and adopt out rabbits to good, loving homes, as well as to educate current and potential rabbit owners. If you'd like to ask Kathy a question about rabbits or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So before we get into a few of those specifics, for those of us who aren't living with rabbits, at least not yet, explain what you love so much about rabbits, what really obviously spoke to you pretty much maybe immediately after that one experience in the backyard 14 years ago.
Yeah, they're very different than cats or dogs, and yet there's some similarities in behavior where, more so with cats, I believe. If you call your rabbit, if they want to come to you, sometimes they'll come to you. If they don't want to come to you, they won't. But I think that's what intrigues me about them. It's the idea that when my rabbit, when I call them, one of them, and they come to me, it's because they really want to. They're looking for affection. They're looking to be petted. They're looking to have some interaction with us humans. They're highly intelligent. They're very, very smart. And I put them sometimes even smarter than cats or dogs, and people will often look at me like, no, they can't be. The issue is that they're very quiet. Of course, they really don't make a lot of noises. They can grunt, they can growl, and they make a high-pitched distress call. And so when they come to you, it's because they really want to, and they're looking to gain affection from you. And when they run around and they show you how happy they are just to be running around your house and jumping in it in the air and refer to doing the Bunny 500, it's just pure joy. And it's very, I find them very relaxing. I find them very sensitive to moods, maybe more so, again, than cats or dogs. And the reason why I say they're highly intelligent is because you can actually watch them and see them work out things. And a cat or a dog being a predator, if they're out there hunting, a coyote, a wolf is out there hunting, if they make a mistake, they get to hunt again. They may go hungry, but they hunt again. If the prey animal makes a mistake, then they're no longer on this earth. Mm. So they have to outsmart the predator. And rabbits can do that really, really well. Even with us humans, they really, when you think you know them, they will do something that is completely out of the realm of what their normal behavior may be. They will surprise you by their exuberance for life. Again, a lot of times when people have a rabbit, they buy them, they put them in an outdoor hutch. We were at an event one day, and we had some baby bunnies there that came from that particular hoarder. And I had a young man come by, and he said, wow, I had a rabbit. I never saw my rabbit act like that. And I asked him, did you keep your rabbit outside? And he said, yes. And the thing with that is that how do you know what their behavior is going to be? They're basically out of sight, out of mind. So when you have them in your home, and you watch their behavior, and you see them, and they will sit on the couch with you. They will sit next to you if you're sitting on the floor, you're doing homework. A lot of students doing homework on the floor. They're there. They're curious. Where's that paper? Oh, let me run away with your paper. things of that sort. So I think that's really what I find so wonderful about them, that they are definitely very smart, very intuitive, and very sensitive animals.
Now I guess there's a new, or probably not new, but new to me, story for when you go tell the teacher, hey, the bunny ate my homework. I guess
Absolutely.
There's something to it. Yeah. Well, let me read one of the emails, among others, that have come in, and then I want to talk a little bit more about Gainesville Rabbit Rescue. But this emailer, Leslie, says, I have a picture of my rabbit on the couch with my dog and cat. He used the dog door to go in and out to the fenced-in backyard, never went to the bathroom inside, super smart. And I loved that rabbit. So there's a little
absolutely.
Bit of...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. They are, they're very, very intelligent. And again, as I said before, one of the reasons why I think people don't believe that they're smart is because they are silent, basically. They don't bark, they don't meow for attention. So people think, oh, they're very quiet, and there can't be much happening in that brain. Look how small that head is. But there's a lot going on there, and they really do work out problems. There are toys that you can buy for rabbits, similar to cat or dog toys, where you can put a treat in, and they have to figure out where that treat is. And it doesn't take them very long to figure that out, usually.
No, they sound very adept at problem-solving, and as you explained, why, as a prey animal, there's not much margin for error, so they have to be super sharp.
Yes, absolutely, and super quick.
Yeah, I guess in making those calculations, there's not a lot of time to sit around and say, okay, what if I do this, what if I do that, when there's a predator looming. So, okay, well, one of our callers has been actually holding for quite some time, so before we get into a little bit more about Gainesville Rabbit Rescue, let's take this call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kathy Finelli.
Hi there.
Yes, thank you so much for this very cute topic. I live in Pinellas, where along the Pinellas Trail and up until recently in my backyard, there were the wild rabbits that are auburn-colored and very smart, because they have to be. But I wanted to ask you about the fact that what I saw with the wild rabbits that were in my yard, some adults and some very cute babies that I had never noticed before, but they play like kittens. The babies do. They jump around with each other. They leap up into the air. It was hilarious. But over time, they all died. And I began to suspect that there were several nefarious causes, because some of my neighbors have those poison lawn companies coming over and spraying poison, and I would see my wild rabbits over there eating their stuff, and I thought, that's not good. Then on two occasions, I found two of the larger rabbits dead on my property, and I remembered that one of my neighbors, the Confederate flag waving one, said that rabbits were varmints and spread disease, and I believe he killed them. They had wounds on them. And it goes back to what you said about rabbits being good for people who are vegan and vegetarian as a moral, ethical issue. Rabbits are like manatees. They harm absolutely no sentient, conscious creature in their cute, beautiful little life. And I just would like you to comment on wild rabbits and why they might, you know, if it's true that they can die from lawn poisons as well as pet rabbits. And also, you know, in the Bay Area, are you local enough so that people, are you in Gainesville or are you in the Bay Area? I can't quite tell from the show so far.
Yeah, we actually rescue rabbits from anywhere that a rabbit is in danger in the state of Florida. Our shelter is located in a little town. We don't publicize our address because, unfortunately, what happens is people will just dump rabbits over the fence, and that can be very dangerous for the rabbit. To answer your question about wild rabbits, just like every wild animal in this world, there is a purpose for them, and their purpose is to feed the predators. So when you talk about wild rabbits compared to pet rabbits, hawks live off wild rabbits, so the circle of life, so to speak, is interrupted when you kill off the prey animals. And when you poison them, the turkey vultures, the hawks, every other animal that preys off of wild animals becomes also sick. And that's why sometimes we have an overabundance of other animals that are in the food chain. So the big difference between wild rabbits and pet rabbits is wild rabbits do belong in the wild, and they help to control weeds, they help to control a lot of different plants that they live off of, as well as feed the other wildlife that we appreciate. We appreciate a hawk. I understand that a hawk has to kill to survive, and I understand that. What I don't want is a hawk to kill a pet rabbit, because that pet rabbit does not belong out there in the wild. And it is very sad that we poison any animal, no matter what that animal is, because it does enter into the food chain. And years ago, that's why people domesticated rabbits. They wanted them in the food chain. As we evolve, so to speak, and we realize what wonderful animals they are, we've turned them into pets. And that's what we think of them only as pets. We don't think of them in the food chain whatsoever. We don't think of them as having to be out in the wild, because they don't belong there. So people who do things like that, they not only poison the rabbits, they poison every other animal, perhaps a stray dog, perhaps a stray cat, and then it ends up in the food chain with the hawks, coyotes, which I know a lot of people think of as vermin, but rabbits are far from vermin. They don't spread diseases to people. There's really only, I believe, one disease that can be spread to humans from a rabbit, and it has to be a rabbit that has the disease. And there's two diseases, actually, one that is spread through eating an infected animal and one that is spread through the blood of the infected animal. But other than that, they don't spread rabies. They don't spread parvo. They don't spread distemper. There's really nothing that most humans can get from a rabbit.
Well, I'm getting more and more sold by the moment on having a rabbit join our household. Now, there's another, not surprising, there's people that want to tap your expertise, Kathy. So we're going to have read one more email question and then get back to some of the other things that about Gainesville Rabbit Rescue that I think we should probably touch on as well. So this one says, I have a mini Rex doe and a male Polish who live indoors. I was told by the breeder that they should never be in a cage together because they would be aggressive toward one another. I have their crates adjacent to each other and they seem to interact through the bars of the gate. Is there any way to test whether they could get along for short periods of time for playtime without incurring injuries? We spend a lot of time with the rabbits out of their crates in the family room, but never at the same time.
Yes, there's a lot of ways. However, one of the other reasons why we don't want the female, and if they have another male there, and I wasn't sure what the sex of the other rabbit was, is because if you do have a male and a female, we don't want breeding. And the way to actually help to introduce, even if it's two females or two boys, is to have them spayed or neutered. Because what that's going to do is to take the hormonal issues away. Rabbits can reproduce at an enormous, I mean, it's ridiculously fast. They can reproduce every 28 to 32 days, the female can have a litter of babies. So what we don't want is people having a male and a female in breeding, because that just adds to the amount of rabbits that have to come into rescue. So if her rabbits or his rabbits are next to each other and they really like to interact with each other, I do suggest that they get them spayed or neutered, and then they can, on neutral territory, introduce them to see how they're going to react to each other. Rabbits are, again, very fussy as to who they will live with, and we do what we refer to as bunny dating. So someone with a neutered male will come to our facility, and we will introduce him to some spayed females to see if he likes them and they like him. Not every rabbit's going to like every rabbit they meet. We don't have a formula that we can say, introduce this rabbit to this rabbit. It's all done by what we believe are the rabbit's own pheromones, whether they like that other rabbit or not. So it's not anything that we can absolutely handle. If this person would like to call us, they can definitely call us or email us. We're always available to give information. And bunny dating is not something that's a five-minute conversation, unfortunately. So if they want to email the rescue or they want to call the rescue, we'll give them hints on what to do. And along with the spay and neuter, I just want to say that we do have a voucher program that will bring the cost of spaying and neutering down to about $65, which for having an exotic vet spay or neuter your rabbit is very inexpensive. Exotic specialists, which a rabbit has to see, can be extremely expensive, especially to spay, depending upon where you are located in the state of Florida.
Okay, Kathy, that's great. A couple things. One is the website is GainesvilleRabbitRescue.org, but if you wouldn't mind providing the email and or the phone number for people listening, I think that'd be helpful for those who may have follow-up questions or questions they didn't get a chance to ask on the show.
Sure. Our email address is the letter G as in George, the letter V as in Victor, rabbitrescue@gmail.com. And then our telephone number is 352-318-0028. And they can email or phone us, and we'd be more than happy to give them any information that they need.
And another thing that we'll probably get into, but since we're sort of talking about it now, do you generally recommend for pet rabbits that they, as a matter of course, are spayed neuter, or is it case by case?
We really recommend that they, especially female rabbits, that every female rabbit that's healthy enough to be spayed. And the reason for that is that the statistics right now are about 75 to almost 80% of unspayed females will die of uterine cancer. Uterine cancer strikes female rabbits as young as about 18 months old, and prime time is from about 18 months to about 5 years of age. That doesn't mean that a younger rabbit can't get it. It doesn't mean that an older rabbit can't develop cancer. They can, but the prime age group is 18 to 5 years of age. Healthy rabbits can be spayed up to about the age of 7, as long as, again, you're using a rabbit-savvy vet. And healthy male rabbits can be neutered up to almost any age. And we do recommend the spaying and neutering to prevent what us humans consider bad behavior, which is unneutered male rabbits can spray to mark their territory. They can become aggressive. They can be very flighty. They can be very active. So spaying and neutering not only has health benefits to prevent reproductive cancers, even in the male, but it also, it calms them down because Mother Nature says to them, you have to reproduce often and quickly. So by spaying and neutering, you take away some of those behaviors that, again, us humans consider not acceptable.
So a few things quickly about Gainesville Rabbit Rescue. So you've been involved for, it's been around for the better part of 20 years, and you've been around for the better part of that time. So first of all, it was founded, if I'm not mistaken, by two University of Florida students. Are one or both of them still involved?
No, most of them have, when they graduated, It was turned over really to Betsy Duncan, who actually started to build the rescue into a nonprofit, which we are, a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
And both of the students, one of them is currently is a veterinarian.
Oh, okay.
And the other one she works with in the health industry. I believe she's an acupuncturist.
Okay. And so how would you say, obviously Betty's effort to make it into more of a rescue and a 501c3 would be a notable one, but how else would you say that the Gainesville Rabbit Rescue has evolved or changed over at least the 14 years or so that you've been involved?
I think the major change has been with Betsy donated her barn to use as the shelter, to use as the rescue, and that allowed us to go from probably in the neighborhood of 30 to 35, 40 adoptions per year up to what we're doing now, which ranges anywhere from about 120, sometimes 150, all the way up there. So having done the shelter, it has allowed us to rescue more rabbits, which has allowed us to place more rabbits into loving homes. And we are a no-kill facility. So if a rabbit comes into the facility and for whatever reason doesn't get adopted, that rabbit will always have a home with us.
Wow, that sounds great. Let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Kathy Finelli, the director of Gainesville Rabbit Rescue. We're talking about pet rabbits and what we should know about them. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So I guess a key question, so we don't run out of time before hitting a few of them at least, is what do rabbits eat, or phrase it another way, what should they eat, and maybe what should they not eat?
Basically, they should eat a real good, a very nutritious rabbit food pellet, but hay, Timothy hay for an adult rabbit should be about 80% of their diet. Then they should have three vegetables every day, three different vegetables: romaine, green leaf, red leaf lettuces, cilantro, Italian parsley, curly parsley, different green vegetables. Carrots are a treat for a rabbit, and treats contain a lot of sugar, so sugar-based treats should be either eliminated or kept to a minimal. And really one of the things that leads to rabbit longevity is a good diet and a good amount of exercise. It pretty much sums it up like us humans. To avoid, they should never have any dairy products. They shouldn't have Cheerios. A lot of people want to give them Cheerios. They should avoid those types of human bread, anything like that. If you keep them to a strict diet, and if you want to give them a treat, give them a piece of apple or a small piece of banana. Most rabbits will go crazy for banana, and if you're sitting on the floor, they'll come right on up and steal it from you. So those are the types of treats they should have maybe once a week. But again, you got to keep sugar to a minimal because sugar is not good for even rabbits.
Yeah, it was interesting, and you did touch on this when I was looking on the website and saw the vegetables that obviously are an essential component of a rabbit's diet. Yeah, that carrots are not on that list, but they are on the list of treats. So it's okay to give them carrots, which that most of us would expect, but most of us might expect that it should be a more central part of the diet, and that's actually not the case.
Correct.
Yeah. And what else about rabbits, caring for rabbits? Are there some major myths and misconceptions about rabbits as pets that a lot of folks that really haven't stepped into that world might need to be disabused of?
Sure. I think the biggest myth that I hear about rabbits is that rabbits smell. And I think that comes from people maybe when they were younger and they had a male rabbit that was not neutered and he was spraying like a little boy cat will do to mark his territory. That will definitely smell. When you spay or neuter your rabbit, when you neuter a rabbit, they will not spray. They use a litter box, and most of them are 100% with their litter box. So a lot of times you'll hear people say, oh, they're messy. Well, if they're not spayed or neutered, yes, they can be very messy because, again, they're marking territory to attract a boy or a girl to them. So when you spay or neuter them, you eliminate that problem. So I think those are the two things that are really paramount in my mind as to what people think about a rabbit. I also think people think that they're low maintenance, that they're cheap animals to keep, and by far they're not. They don't need shots like a cat or a dog, but rabbit vets can be very expensive, especially if, like most animals, as they get older, sometimes they develop teeth, and that will definitely cause some issues with financial difficulties for some people. To pull a rabbit's tooth can be expensive.
And I take it if they do develop teeth that they must be pulled. They can't like leave the teeth as is. Or is there discomfort or other issues that
right.
happen? Okay.
If a rabbit develops a tooth root abscess, unlike us humans where we would go in for a root canal, if a rabbit develops a tooth root abscess, that tooth and possibly another couple of teeth need to be pulled. And if the vet at the time doesn't get the entire root, that tooth will grow back. And that's what a lot of people think, that rabbits are rodents because their teeth constantly grow. But rabbits are in their own classification. They are not rodents. They're lagomorphs. But they do have teeth like a rodents that constantly grow, which is why hay is so important to them for chewing and for their digestive tract.
Okay. Early on, you kind of touched on, especially tied to the whole Easter Bunny dump-related things, but just generally, it seems like a key question about who should and shouldn't have rabbits join their household. I guess the kid issue relative to the parent issue seems to be kind of paramount.
That's probably, I would say that the majority of our rabbits come into rescue because the children lost interest in the rabbit, because children look at a rabbit and they see this cute, cuddling animal. And when they bring the rabbit home as an infant, the rabbit is easy to pick up, easy to hold, because like most of us, it has two defenses. It either runs away or it freezes. And when they're infants, then they're not quick, they freeze. So it's easy to pick them up, easy to hold them. As they become older, they don't want to be picked up. Again, as a prey animal, picking them up is really scary to them because now they're being lifted off the ground, their feet are in midair. So is it something trying to kill them? So they will struggle. And children will get scratched because their nails are like dog nails. They're non-retractable. And the kids lose interest very quickly because the rabbit is far from a cuddle animal. So that's when they primarily come into rescue. In the 14 years or so that I'm doing rescue, I would say that only on two occasions did I truly understand why the rabbit had to come into rescue, because the rabbit was extremely aggressive under all circumstances, and not due to mishandling, not due to neglect or abuse, but just something innate in that particular animal that made it aggressive.
Just a temperament, fundamental
Correct.
Temperament issue. I gotcha. A caller holding and an email question. One quick question, at least on the email front, is what is the youngest age to spay a rabbit, this emailer is asking?
Usually, if you don't have any other rabbits in the household, we recommend about between 6 and 8 months of age. However, if you have a male and a female in the household, the male should be neutered at about 3 months as soon as his testicles descend. And keep in mind that male rabbits, freshly neutered, are still able to impregnate an unspayed female for up to 4 to 6 weeks, depending upon the individual animal. So again, if you have a single female, I would recommend you get them spayed at 8 months. They can be spayed at 3.5 months of age, but really no younger than that.
Okay, great. Let's take one more caller if we have time here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kathy Finelli from Gainesville Rabbit Rescue.
Yes, I came into the conversation kind of late, but I'll, a couple of misconceptions on rabbits that I'd like to point out in case they weren't actually pointed out. They're not even close to beginner pets. I think you touched on that a little bit. And exercise-wise, I would love to believe that most people would be able to actually let them free range around the house, assuming, you know, it's rabbit-proofed, you know, cords and whatnot, because they really can be litter trained completely. I have two dwarf Netherlands in my house right now, and they very rarely have any accidents around the house whatsoever. They have a couple litter boxes just like a cat, except the litter box is actually much cleaner than a cat's litter box ever is.
Absolutely.
And they make great pets, but they're not beginner pets whatsoever. They really, in my opinion, they really shouldn't be for kids at all. I did have a question, though.
Okay, a quick question. We're sort of nearing the end of our time, but I'm sure Kathy would be happy to answer your question. What is it?
Okay, I was told by the vet that one of the rabbits had gotten pinworms a while back, and the vet basically told us that it wasn't that big of a deal whatsoever. Do you agree? Because I don't. When I researched it, I didn't agree at all.
I'm sorry, what did the vet tell you your rabbit had?
Pinworms.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Usually worms and rabbits are fairly rare, and they, as long as you treat them with the proper medicine for what they have, it should clear it up fairly quickly. Just like cats and dogs, they can pick up that type of a worm. I believe they also get a couple of other different types of worms, but usually worms are not too big of an issue. There are a lot of other things like coccidia that can be a bigger issue. Stasis could be a big issue, which is the gut slowing down. But mm-hmm. If somebody told me my rabbit had pinworms and I was treating them properly, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Am I concerned? Absolutely. Whenever a rabbit has anything, you should be concerned. But usually with that type of a worm issue, it can be cleared up.
Well, she said it didn't even need to be treated with medication. I'm treating with medication now. But
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Something that I've done myself and found out what to use.
And one other thing that I would like to say about this is that when you go to the vet with any animal, you are that animal's advocate. So if your rabbit is not getting better, you need to speak up and you need to ask, do we need to change the medication? Do I need to do something differently? Do I need to feed something differently? And I find that true of any animal. We're their advocate at the vet's office because the vet is looking at something and they send the medicine home, and now the rabbit's not getting better. You need to let the vet know that.
Okay, I think that's the perfect note on which to end. Caller, thank you for your question and comments. And we've been speaking with Kathy Finelli from Gainesville Rabbit Rescue. Again, the website is gainesvillerabbitrescue.org. Or if you'd like to call and have a follow-up question or a question you get a chance to ask during the show, it's 352-318-0028. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I learned a lot about rabbits, and I'm going to guess that most people listening did as well.
Thank you, Duncan. I really appreciate it, and we just want people to come through rescue to get an animal because they're already spayed or neutered, and we know their personalities.
Right, and you've got all kinds of nice bunnies available for joining the right home at the moment. So
absolutely, and we thank you so much for having us.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right.
In a few moments, I'll speak with Dina Athanasi of the Animal Coalition of Tampa about its 17th annual Stride for Strays fundraiser happening this Sunday at Perry Harvey Senior Park in Tampa. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner, where we have a newish piece by an old favorite. Not even doing stand-up per se, rather in a panel conversation with Conan O'Brien, this is Dave Attell with a piece I'm calling Pets in today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking animals.
I enjoy the zoo. I love animals.
Yeah.
Do you like animals?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
There's some animals that I think we can, you know, I don't know, like a lizard. Like, that's a big pet now, lizards, you know? For those of you who think you might want a lizard as a pet, here's what you should do. Go home, draw eyes on a shoe, and talk to it. All right?
Not a dynamic pet, no.
Not a very, yeah, right there. And, you know, New York City, dogs and cats rule. You know,
yeah,
really do.
Sure.
And we're the cat people, because we'll talk about you guys first. Yeah. Cat people are great. I know cats are the gateway pet to hoarding, but I'll tell you. No, dogs, you know, like, they're very, very sophisticated now. They, in fact, like, you know, my roommate's dog is on Ambien because he has nightmares. Can you believe that?
Yeah. The dog has nightmares.
Dog nightmares.
And it's on Ambien?
Yeah.
The nightmares?
Yeah. Now, I cannot believe, like, a dog would have a nightmare because I think they have a great life. I mean, they don't work, you know? I mean, they just play and eat. I mean, I'm like, looking at the dog, he's just yelping and barking and his paws are moving. I'm like, what is it, boy? Is there a ball under a couch in your mind somewhere? Was there someone at the door, but they weren't there, and then you thought they were there, and you had to run back and forth? Is that it? I never know what to do when you see a dog having a nightmare.
No, no, no. Yeah, no, it's not much.
I just pull up my pants and leave the room.
All right, listen.
How to get one in there. I had to try it.
I had to.
Took it into the gutter. I apologize.
That was David Tell with a piece I've called Pets, taken from a fairly recent appearance on Conan. Now on to my conversation with Dina Athanasi of the Animal Coalition of Tampa. And let's welcome Dina back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dina.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
So let's briefly review for those who may not be familiar. Maybe you could just give a very quick overview of what Animal Coalition of Tampa is or does.
Animal Coalition of Tampa is a nonprofit, low-cost clinic. Now, most people know us as the spay-neuter clinic, and we certainly do high-volume spay-neuter, but we also do other things. General wellness, dentals, vaccines, microchips, all sorts of services.
And to provide those low-cost services of various kinds, of course, you rely on donations, but critically, I think, are a couple of big annual fundraising events each year, including Stride for Strays, which not coincidentally is happening this Sunday. So
yes.
Tell us what that is and how it works and other things that we should know.
Okay, great. So this is our 17th annual Stride for Strays. It's our dog walk fundraiser. And how it works is people register, and they get a T-shirt, a bracelet, and a tote bag. And then they get their friends and family and coworkers to pledge to their campaign, and they get incentive prizes. And we've got some really cool incentive prizes this year. Two of my favorites are we've got this Olympic-style medal, ribbon around the neck with a big gold medal in the front, like the Olympics. But instead of like the five Olympic rings, it's got a paw print. So cool. It's on
nice.
Our Facebook page. And we've also got tickets for the top fundraisers. They'll be invited to a pair of tickets to our spaghetti dinner, which is in the spring. So that's how it works leading up to the event.
Yeah.
And the event,
go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so the event itself is this Sunday, the 22nd, at Perry Harvey Senior Park in Tampa, and it's from 9:30 to 2. So let's say for one reason or another, people thought, well, this sounds fun because there's other stuff going on that hopefully you'll explain in one sec, but if they just don't have a dog to put in the walk or just aren't up to it for some reason, there's still plenty of cool things for them to do at the event, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, and it's funny you mentioned that because that is the question I've been asked very often while talking to people about this event is people say, well, what if I don't have a dog? Can I still come? And the answer is absolutely. You know, you're welcome to bring your dog and walk in the event, but you certainly don't need to have a dog to walk in the event. You could still do the walk.
And what else is going on there, Dina, just so we're starting to run out of time, but what else is going on that day that people that aren't able to participate or don't have a dog or whatever, what else is going on there that they could enjoy nonetheless?
Well, we've got live music. We've got this great classic rock band called the Doodads that are coming. They're big animal lovers. They played Woofstock a couple of months ago. They're really awesome. Vendors, food. We've got a gal, Lori from Stained Body Art, does this these amazing henna tattoos, really intricate, gorgeous stuff. And she's doing, this is really cool, she's doing this special paw print design for ACT. There's going to be like little paw prints going up your arm, henna tattoo. And the proceeds from that she will give to ACT. So that's really cool. And we've got our contest. We've got the costume contest called Dress to the Canines, the Mini-Me, which is a look-alike contest, and then my favorite contest, the kissing contest, and that is called The Wetter, the Better.
Okay. Well, that's got everything and then some. Yeah,
yeah.
Cool. Okay, so again, for people that want to register or find out more, there's a dedicated website, strideforstrays.org, or you could go to actampa.org, or as you noted a moment ago, there's a Facebook page that people could visit to find out more or get more involved, get the whole lowdown if they miss some details driving around or otherwise for what's coming up this Sunday at Perry Harbor Senior Park.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Dina. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Duncan.
Coming up at 11, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity kicking off. A three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lalay. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. Right now, it's time to get into Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We will take any guesses off the air because we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Next week, our guest will be John Corey, previously a producer of Forks Over Knives, also a producer of Plant Pure Nation, a new documentary screening at Tampa Bay Veg Fest happening November 4th at Coton Show before Brook Park. And Corey will be holding a discussion after the film about the film at the screening. So we'll look forward to that next Wednesday. It's Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Watch, and beyond. NPR News is next.